Good morning, 640 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Happy Friday, and more to the relevant point for my next guest, happy end of session day. We've got Alex Andrade. He is our state representative for District 2 joining us every Friday through session, typically is when we talk with him. Alex, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy Friday.
Are you excited to be able to get back home and get some sleep and have, you know, only your regular duties to think about for the most part?
Yeah. that's an understatement.
Yeah. So budgets, obviously, I mean, there's all kinds of bills in the flurry of last minute passages, but budget was obviously the big thing that you've been working on, losing sleep over, and a fair number of projects getting funded locally, right?
Yeah, no, a large number of projects getting funded locally. Of the ones on my list in the House that Senator Braxton had in the Senate, I think that, I mean, Northwest Florida benefited immensely from having Senator Braxton as the Senate Appropriations Chair. I think he deserves like 95% of all credit anyone takes for getting money back here in Pensacola, Northwest Florida. But, I mean, we're talking like $2 million more for the Gulf Breeze pedestrian overpass, the second pedestrian overpass, ultimately about $7 million for the old Baptist Hospital campus, $5 million for the Pensacola Airport, $2 million plus dollars for the Bay Bluffs Park, $1.5 million. Well, this is one that it wasn't with Senator Braxton because it's a statewide issue, but it's something that's important to me, which was the Florida Debate Initiative. For the past several years, I've gotten money from them to try and encourage debate in high school, because I think the only way we can kind of resolve a lot of what we're seeing in the division in society right now is through actually arming people with the tools to debate, not with the opinions to fight over. You know what I mean? So that's a big one for me. And
you and I agree about this, but I don't want to let it go without making the point that the greatest value that debate does is not necessarily arm you with the ability to reason from fact and evidence and logic, although yes, obviously, but it's the ability that it forces you to argue for positions you don't agree with and to learn to see points of view that you didn't understand before and tend to dismiss immediately. That, to me, that's like, when people can do that, we can have a healthy democracy. When people can't do that, well, you know, we get what we're getting. So I'm sorry, go ahead, Alex.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I tend to think of it like the trait of empathy as a muscle, and if you don't engage it, right, it atrophies. I think debate absolutely allows people to empathize with other folks, even if they might not agree with them. But yeah, Big Brothers Big Sisters is another one that I care deeply about. So, yeah. I mean, I could not be prouder of Senator Braxton, prouder of his last year in the Florida Senate, and I'm excited to come home with a lot of things to celebrate.
We had a fair number of bills kind of, you know, that we've been waiting to see them go through, including the social media revamp bill, which now, for the most part, the big change is that you and I won't have to go through age verification, and really nobody has to go through age verification, but there's cause of action if you find minors on the platform, and now parents can opt in for their 14- and 15-year-olds, right? That's the basic change from the original banning everybody 15 and under, right?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, this is a massive compromise. We've spent the past several weeks saying that, you know, social media was digital fentanyl, and I happen to agree. I don't think there should be any kind of parental consent, but we, you know, sometimes in the process, you're forced to find compromises when people have valid disagreements of opinion. And so, after the veto, this was the compromise that was struck, and it's certainly a step in the right direction, and a major step in the right direction. So. You saw everyone kind of celebrate the same way when we voted to pass this the other day.
Did he veto it because of concerns about legal success, or did he veto it because he really thinks the bill was misguided?
That's a great question. I'd have to go read the letter that he provided with the veto. But what I can also say is, like, those letters are sometimes misleading.
Okay.
They don't always tell the whole story. Like, there was an alimony bill, an alimony reform bill that he vetoed one year and signed the next. And they were nearly identical. You know, there's so much going on. It's tough to tell. I think, you know, sometimes if you don't spend
enough time thinking through something or listening, like you did, Andrew, to the committee testimony and the sponsor's testimony on this bill. You know, if you recall at the beginning of session, I started from the same position the governor did.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I had the same kind of trepidation. And then you hear these stories and you see these concerns and you start thinking of it and, well, you know, how addictive is it? How right. harmful is it? How close to a drug is it? And if you start really going down that path and you look at it, there's no distinction. There's no difference. This is something that has no benefit, extreme amounts of harm, a high rate of addiction, and we should be treating it like a drug.
Yeah, no, and that's a really good point is I find on a lot of these bills that my initial reaction is one thing, but then when I start to listen to the testimony and the arguments and the nuanced clarifications of everything, it persuades me, which is the point of debate, right? But if you haven't had the time or spent the time to go through that like you do or I do, or, you know, I can understand why people would have a particular reaction to it. So understandable. It doesn't make the reaction right. It just means it's sort of an understandable reaction. The District 4, the replacement for Commissioner Bender, nobody seems to have any idea what's going on. I've tried to get information from the governor's office. Is it just that, like, it's during session, he's too busy with that? Or, I mean, do you have any sense of this? I know I've asked you before, but I'm always looking for, because we need to get a fifth commissioner.
Yeah. Do people remember how long it took him to appoint someone to the school board?
When Elvin McCorvey died, it was like 10 months. That was ridiculously bad. And that was only for ECUA or school board or whatever. So, yeah.
Yeah. So two months is nothing. people can be impatient all their life, but like 2 months is nothing. I'm sure it'll come in the next month or so, but there's not a massive sense of urgency, doesn't feel like, from the governor's office to make these types of appointments.
Fair enough. Wanted to ask you one thing is, just as we're going through the release of these bills into the governor's office, and they will be sort of gradually released him over the course of the next few weeks, what is the rule? Because it's not as much of a time constraint as during session, how long he's got to veto things, right?
Yeah, I think I know that during session, if we send him a bill that we've already both passed, like the House and the Senate, 7 days, I always forget if it's 15 or 30, but it's an order of magnitude longer that the governor can sit on bills for us to sign them if we send them to him after session. So if I were to guess, I think it's something like 15 days or 20 days, but I'd have to double check the Constitution to confirm.
There were several bills that I had not really been paying much attention to, but then, you know, forcing myself to listen to several hours of Senator House, votes. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting bill I wasn't familiar with. The two that caught me most by surprise that I had not heard was the water quality bill, requiring local counties and cities to notify the public within 24 hours of any dangerous water, contaminated water. And then the other one was on contractor fraud, requiring contractors to take money from a client and put it into an escrow account the way a lawyer would, to only be usable for that client's project instead of always robbing Peter to pay Paul, which, you know, we know that has been a major source of problems here locally. Those two seem like very good bills to me.
Yeah, the contractor one, I'm not sure how it's going to work in practice.
Sure,
but,
I understand.
I think any additional protection for, you know, everyday citizens on water contamination is a good thing. Yeah. I have had to take a couple no votes. You know, I've been the sole no vote or a no vote out of like 10 other no votes on a couple bills this past week. But there's been a lot of interesting bills.
I haven't followed all the votes. Any one of those no votes that stands out to you?
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of times we criminalize things kind of like in a knee-jerk reaction. So there's these concerns where you have a first responder shows up to a scene and they get exposed to fentanyl and they have to take Narcan to revive themselves, sometimes more than once. While I understand and sympathize with the fear in that situation, there was a member of the House who wanted to make it a second-degree felony to recklessly expose somebody in that circumstance to fentanyl. what I think the net effect of that is going to be is, one, there's no way you're able to prosecute the actual crime that was created by that bill. And two, every single person who is right now hoping that they won't be prosecuted if they call 911 after they see a friend overdose is now going to be terrified of calling in to 911 if they see an overdose.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like the message that sends. I think you should feel very safe. If you see a friend who's overdosed, you should feel very safe calling that in. So I was, I think, the only Republican who voted no on that bill.
I will also say that the one that caught me by surprise when I was listening to the Senate, because I hadn't caught it on the House side, was the perimeter around a crime, like a law enforcement or first responder situation, had been 14 feet, and you guys pushed it back to 25 feet, which the Senate agreed to, right?
Yeah, 25 feet, and there was a lot of debate on that one, and a lot of debate that was kind of silly. I mean, we have domestic violence injunctions that say someone can't get within 500 feet of, you know, a petitioner's home. And now all of a sudden, like, try eyeballing 500 feet. Now all of a sudden we're having issues with eyeballing 25 feet. Or we're having to use people's desks on the floor to explain what 25 feet is to people. Some of that kind of felt ridiculous.
And that was one where my first reaction was, well, that's a long way away to get a good video. But at the same time, when you can set a perimeter for 500 feet or a mile or, you know, a half mile, depending on public safety needs, that, you know, 25 feet doesn't seem all that big. And that was persuasive in the Senate. So, you know, that was one I was kind of pulled around on when my initial reaction was 25 feet seems like a long way if you're watching cops misbehave, you know, if that's the case that's going on. Alex Andrade, he's our state representative for District 2. As always, Alex, thanks for being with us every Friday to kind of walk us through session. Thanks for all the work that you've done this year, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon. But seriously, thank you for giving up time with your family and being here and taking all the trips and doing all the work and communicating so consistently. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew.